Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the best fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys who own Eric Karlsson and their keeper pools. I am your host, Elon Dubrowski. Today we've got a special show. We have an interview for you. So Brian is not here, but in his place we've got the prospect expert, director of film scouting at Elite Prospects, managing editor of Dauber Prospects. He is the Keeping Karlsson prospect expert, Cam Robinson. Welcome to the show, Cam.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on, Elon. Always fun.
Yeah, we're always very excited to have you on. Our listeners, whenever I mention that, oh, Cam's coming, we get a ton of questions, and today is no different. Everyone wants to get your expertise for their dynasty leagues and ask about prospects, and I have my more like basic questions about people who were rookies last year that, you know, the regular fantasy players have heard of. Before we get into all of that, like, how's everything going with you? Obviously, these are crazy times right now, and we wish the best to all of our listeners. Hope everyone's staying safe. Hope we'll give you a fun distraction or so over the next hour and a half. But yeah, Cam, how are you doing with everything?
Yeah, we're doing well over here. I think my wife might want me back at work because I'm starting to become a danger to the household. The other day, she asked me to crack her back. And so I was doing the bear hug technique, and as I've done many, many times. And as I was giving her the last crack, her rib just exploded my arms. It was this sickening sound and the feeling of it. And I thought I broke her back.
Oh my God. We're going to have to put an explicit warning on this podcast.
I know, right? But fortunately it was a floating rib, so she's not completely hobbled up, but still not ideal for a lady carrying around a 7-month-old baby 95% of her time. But she's been gracious about it anyways, but because she asked me to do it, but I feel terrible about it. So I've been hiding away and trying to be as kind as I can.
Wow. Okay. Well, definitely wishing her a fast recovery. That's brutal. I can't imagine. Man. I was not expecting that story. Oh my God. And I guess professional wise, I guess there's not as much hockey to write about lately, which is, I guess, not the best thing for you, but it's great for us because you were able to join us for a podcast. I know you've been super busy over the past year writing in a bunch of different places.
Mm-hmm, yeah, for sure. And so with the COVID shutdown of hockey, that's pretty much wiped out about 2/3 of my writing commitment. Understandably. And so, yeah, so I've kind of been on a bit of a podcast freeze. I've let one or two sneak in if they kind of time out perfectly for me. But with the new baby at home and all the writing commitments, all the scouting, and of course, I'm a full-time teacher as well, that time was a little tough to peel away. So it's nice to bring the old Yeti mic back out and do some podcasts over this little spell here.
Perfect. Yeah. Hey, we're Yeti brothers. I've got it on cardio mode, which I think is the nicest sounding mode. So I think with that, we're ready to go. Obviously, congrats, by the way, on the new baby. I guess this was already a few months ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. She's almost 8 months now, but still a little handful, of course.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, especially with your wife currently on the shelf. So hope everything's well. Okay, let's get to all of these questions. So again, we asked our patrons and we asked on Twitter for people to give us our questions for Cam, and people did not disappoint. But first, I want to throw some Elon basic questions at you. And I want to start with the main rookies going into last season. Of course, Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko. You were obviously very high on them, as were a lot of people. I took a look at your projections, which were great and a great resource going into drafts. Unfortunately, you, like most of the other projectors, were super high, or I guess too high, on Hughes and Kakko. You had 65 points for Hughes and 60 for Kakko. It ended up, Jack Hughes, I guess we could start with him, only 21 points in 61 games. He started playing with Hall and Palmieri, but then he got dropped down the depth chart pretty quickly. Interestingly, at the end of the season, right before the pause, he was playing on a line with Nico Hischier. Not that it helped. Hughes was pointless in his final 7 games. So at this point now, going into next season, do you have a sense of where you'll be projecting Jack Hughes? Like, was this a big disappointment, something that makes you change your mind about his future potential? Or is it just, okay, he was 18, don't worry about it?
Yeah, I think it probably just offers up more opportunity for people to try to steal this kid before he actually hits his window to really put up some big points. And so, you know, in the past I've been maybe a little too low on some of these young players coming into the league and been a bit gun shy to give them you know, a projection of 50, 60 points. And then often I look like I'm a little too down on it. And so this past year, like you said, I had them both clicking at a 60 point pace or above. And obviously that didn't happen. And so that didn't happen for a myriad of reasons. Number one, their age, the transition, especially for Jack Hughes coming out of the U.S. National Development Program, the first ever player to come out of that straight to the NHL. That's a huge gap, like just a wide, wide, wide gap between those two leagues. And then for Kakko coming over from Finland too, he was playing in a pro league, but a different size ice sheet, you know, obviously just coming to North America and the culture shock. So there's some things that you can kind of explain, and then you can look at the deployment as well too. So, you know, for Hughes, he was getting a healthy dose of offensive zone start times, bouncing around the lineup a lot though too, which I think is always difficult for young players. I find that when you see an 18, 19 year old step into the league and at least find some cohesion with a single line mate that maybe they can link up for the vast majority of their shifts throughout the season, that they kind of get that comfort zone. They can work with someone, you know, hopefully it's a veteran who can kind of lead the way and show them the ropes. And I felt like neither player really had that. So coming into this next season, whenever that starts or this one regains its speed here, I'd probably pick them to go around the same thing that I put them this year. So I think that they both have the goods to really jump up next season and push into that 50, 60 point pace. And then we always knew that their real peak window is going to be, you know, 21, 22 to that 27 range. So we still got a bit of a wait, but you know, I keep babysitting the guy in my league who has Hughes. I'm texting him fairly often, just, you know, keeping it on his mind. Maybe Hughes isn't that great. Maybe you should send him to me for a lesser player and we can all be happy. But no, I think that I'm expecting Kakko to hopefully rise up the lineup a little bit more and find some deployment with an offensive minded center. If the Rangers can facilitate that, maybe that's Philip Hedel. And then for Hughes, you know, for a long time, I said that it wasn't a slam dunk that this kid was going to play the middle of the ice. And so, as you said, he was found himself on a line with Nico Hischier to end the season. And I thought that they looked okay together. And just giving him that freedom to play on the wing, I think would be very beneficial for him too. It's just, he doesn't have to be as defensively responsible. He's still a slight kid to try to match up against top six centers and let him that freedom to create and fly up and down the wing.
Yeah, so actually Brian put a note in my notes here that I shared with him wanting me to ask you between Hughes and Hischier who is going to be the number one center at the start of next season or in 21-22. Sounds like you're saying it's possible that maybe it'll be one of them, but the other one will be on the wing. Maybe Jack Hughes is on the wing and doesn't really mean it has to be a competition between the two.
Yeah, I think that people kind of sleep on Hischier. He's a very, very talented player and a two-way guy too. So I think for me, he's still there. He's still the projected one center next year, probably playing with Kyle Palmieri if he's back. And then, you know, maybe it's Hughes on the wing with him. Maybe it's Hughes on the wings with Zajac as he found himself this year. Or maybe they try to slide him in that as that 2C. But at this point, I don't see Hughes overtaking the one center job away from Hischier.
Interesting. So, okay, let's say if you had Hischier in this league where you're babysitting the Jack Hughes owner, would you be willing to trade Hischier for Hughes in fantasy right now? Or do you think that Hischier might actually be the better asset?
I think long term it's going to be Hughes, so I would make that deal right now and eat a little bit of the points for the next year or two.
Interesting. Yeah, your team is so stacked anyways, you could afford to lose one. And I guess sticking on New Jersey, another question I wanted to throw at you. We did a couple weeks ago a hot takeoff where different people sent us their spicy takes. And actually, you have a very spicy take I want to get into soon. But for our hot takeoff, my take that I threw in is I said that I think that Nikita Gusev will be the top scorer of all first and second year players next year. And I wanted to get your take as the prospect expert, knowing all the rookies from this year and the people who are going to be coming in next year. Gusev obviously was a disappointment at the start, like only 44 points in 66 games overall and definitely slower than that at the start, but then he really picked it up. Like after November 28th, I'm starting from an arbitrary day, we see 36 points in 46 games for a 64-point pace. This is obviously a former KHL leading scorer. So do you think that Nikita Gusev is the front runner to be the leader in this group of first or second year players next year? Or do you think I'm totally whiffing and missing out on someone much better, like say a Hughes or Kakko or someone else?
I think that that's plausible. You know, he's already a veteran aged player. And you could see as we went down the stretch this past season, I suppose, is that he was finding consistent production too. He was clicking at probably whatever, a 65 point pace there. I think that it's reasonable. I think more likely we're going to see a guy like Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes really explode up into that 60-point range as well. You know, then there's still guys like Victor Olofsson, who's getting all the prime minutes in a really nice situation in Buffalo that could do some damage. I think Martin Nakash takes a big step up, and then obviously Hughes and Kakko. Alexis Lafreniere is going to be stepping into the league, and I... So I maybe gave Jack Hughes a 65-point pace this past season, and he didn't live up to expectations. I'll be giving Lafreniere about the same thing, and I think that the odds that he does hit those expectations is much higher than what Hughes had coming into this year, that he's physically more mature. He's an older player for his class, too, so he's been 18 the entire season. He'll be 19 when the year starts next year. I think that he's got a good chance to really step in and be that first-year 60-plus point season guy. So, you know, Gusev could be a point-of-game guy, though, too, right? Like, that's what we kind of hoped for when he was crossing over from the KHL, is that this guy was a dominant player in the KHL and that he had all those same experiences that Kako was going to have. He was just older and worked his way through them a little bit easier. So coming to a different ice sheet, coming to North America, you know, maybe learning the language barrier is going to be transitionally different, and finding defensive responsibility in the NHL and earning the trust from your coach and all that stuff is going to be much, much easier in year two for him. So he's an interesting guy for sure. He's one that I'll definitely have on my watch list for someone who could, instead of being at a 50-point pace, being at a 60-65-point pace.
Okay, yeah, I'm glad to hear that you agree with me. Maybe it turns out it wasn't even that spicy of a take, because all the players that you're mentioning, you're having hovering around 60 points in the defenseman. That would be interesting if it ends up being a defenseman ending up leading it, being either Makar or Hughes, and I'll ask you about them in a little bit. But you brought up Alexis Lafreniere, so I wanted to ask you, there are a bunch of projections coming out of the upcoming NHL draft, and I saw a tweet by Colin Cudmore saying that your take that Alexis Lafreniere should be number two with Quinton Byfield being number one is the spiciest projection out there. So I'm curious, like, first of all, why did you come up with this take that Byfield should be number one, and are you still sticking with that? And how do you feel that Colin Cudmore said that you have the spiciest one of the bunch?
Oh, that's actually a very nicely put way. I got some different responses from some people that are very big champions of Alexis Lafreniere on my draft rankings when I released him last week. No, I'm sticking with it. I actually had Byfield number one on my board when I released back in December ahead of the World Junior Championships too. So this is something that weighs on me heavily. I lose a lot of sleep kind of flip-flopping between those two.
I think the same thing happened last year, right? Cam, weren't you like losing sleep over Hughes versus Kako?
I was. And I think that that one was razor thin, too. And I also I have a bit of an issue with people just being so definitive in their mandate that, like, this player is the best player in the group. He's number one. Anybody who says differently is outrageous and just looking for clicks and being contrarian for that reason. So I put out, and I got a lot of that when I released last week. And so I put out just a little quick poll that said, you know, in the 20 years between 1995 and 2005, or 2015, I beg your pardon, the 20 years, how many first overall picks do you think were the slam dunk, clear cut best player in their class? And so, and I gave a range, you know, 1 to 4 or 1 to 5, 6 to 9, and so on. And for the most part, the vast majority of people picked either 1 to 5 or 6 to 9. And they're right. And so by my count, there's 4 locked in players from that 20-year gap that is absolutely the best player in their group. And then probably 4 or 5 others that you could make a strong case for, but it could be an argument nonetheless. And so for anyone to really, in the world of prospect scouting, to be so definitive, I'm not sitting here and saying definitively that Quinton Byfield's going to be the best player from this crop. It could be someone that gets drafted 197th, like we saw Pavel Datsyuk back in the day there in Le Cavalier's year. So for me, it's not about deciding who the best player is today. I find that that's a fairly easy exercise for people that are watching enough games. What we're trying to do is we're trying to project out. We're trying to see who's going to be the better player in 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, 12 years, and so on. And there's a lot of things that come into that. And so as of right now, Alexis Lafreniere is the best player by a good margin in this class. He's the most NHL ready. If I'm picking first in my dynasty draft, I'm taking Lafreniere. He's going to step in. He's going to put up big points. You don't have to wait. Hell, I might have Marco Rossi number two on that board if I'm doing fantasy, because again, he's another player who I think is going to probably translate a little bit quicker than Byfield was. But if we're talking real life and we're talking about the uniqueness of a 6'5", 200, and he'll probably play at 230 in the NHL center, who has hands like Jason Spezza and can skate like the wind with his powerful stride, That's unicorn type stuff. That's something that we don't see too often. Basically, you know, Evgeny Malkin was the last one we saw. Before that, it was Jumbo who didn't skate like Byfield does. So his upside is just so unique that whatever team could get him, it could have a seismic impact on their organization moving forward. And I think that that is more valuable than a really play driving, highly, highly skilled left winger in Lafreniere.
Okay, yeah, I guess that makes sense, right? And obviously, there's a big difference between value to the team and then value in fantasy. Like, if you had the first pick overall in a dynasty league and you were drafting based on the players who are going to be available after the draft, at that point, would you take Lafreniere? Or do you still feel like Byfield's also going to be more valuable fantasy-wise?
No, I think for fantasy, it would be Lafreniere for me. And like I was saying, that I might even look at Marco Rossi at number two, because I think both those players are going to step into the NHL next year or have a very good chance. The whole prospect development camp and missing out on many tournaments this summer might impact a lot of young players' chances of really stepping in and stealing a job, which is unfortunate. But for Rossi, it's either he's not going back to the OHL. So he's either heading back to Europe to play for a season or he's going to be in the NHL. So, yeah, for me, we're talking real life here with those draft rankings, and I got Byfield up there now. I'll do one more before the draft, whenever that is. But at this point, I'm not sure I can waver. I've kind of planted my flag in the ground now.
Yeah, and I guess, unfortunately, we're not going to be getting any new data for you to incorporate into it. So there wouldn't really be much of a justification. So that is an interesting tweet, by the way, that you made. There were a lot of fun answers as people were trying to predict, like, or give their opinions on where the drafts, where the first overall pick ended up being the for sure, like, number one player after it was all said and done. I'm looking at the list of first round picks here, like Joe Thornton in 97, Crosby in 05, McDavid in 15, and probably like Patrick Kane in 07. Are those your like locked in four guaranteed ones?
Yeah, those are the four gimmies. And then, you know, you can talk about Ovi versus Malkin, which is a very difficult one. And then, Stamkos, Doughty, Carlson in another year, Kovalchuk and Spezza, McKinnon, Barkov. So a couple of them you could probably say definitively that, you know, EK was the best from his crop. McKinnon is probably the best from his crop, but still it's less than half for sure. And so it's just interesting to see when people are so hell-bent on groupthink. And that's kind of the thing that's really gotten to me, is that over the years doing this, is that I have in the past kind of succumbed to that groupthink, that external pressure from every public list has this guy number one. You know, I'm obviously wrong. I should fall in line and kind of toe the company line a little bit here. And so I kind of reference 2017 often, is that I didn't feel that Nolan Patrick was a top five player in the class, but everybody else had him one. Some had him two. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of hedged my bet a little bit and put him at number three, despite my feeling that I felt he should have been kind of seven or eight. And I feel like I was probably right in that estimation, but I didn't follow through on it. And so I made myself a promise that, you know, I'm not going to be pressured into things by that groupthink mentality. I'm just going to, you know, this is how I see it. This is how I'm projecting it. I'm not saying that I'm right all the time. Ask my wife. That is certainly not true. But I'm at least going to stick to my guns with it when I feel some way.
Interesting. It's interesting to hear the progression of the Cam Robinson rankings and how like these different lessons that you've learned. And yeah, Nolan Patrick, unfortunately, didn't even play last season with his migraine disorder. Hopefully he'll at least have the opportunity to try to earn that like top seven spot that you would have put him in. Do you have, since you brought him up, I'm just curious, like at this point, if you had him in a, you know, long-term dynasty league, is he someone you'd be just like dropping potentially, or is he still someone you think has some potential, even if it's not as high as some people thought it would be?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what the circumstances of a league are. If you have a space to keep him, that, you know, I wouldn't be mad about keeping him around, because I think he still has upside as a number two center who can fill some categories as well. You know, the guy's got still whatever over. He's paced out at like 30 or 40 points per game in his career so far, in an early career. So I think he still has some upside. He's not a player that you want to write off. It's just that I don't see that 75, 85 point upside that you see from some other guys in that class, like Hischier and obviously Pettersson and Makar, and even Cody Glass, I think, has that upside.
Yeah, and actually, I think that, if I recall correctly, you on a Keeping Carlson episode at one point was saying that Travis Konecny was going to be like the big star out of Philly of these like rookies that we were talking about at the time. We were including Nolan Patrick in that list, and you really got Konecny right. I think, if I recall correctly, you were talking about how Konecny, the main concern for you was just his injuries, and that he seemed to get hurt all the time. But last season, he was healthy the whole time, and what a breakout. So I think that counts as a win for you.
Yeah, I'll take it. Absolutely. He's a fun player, too. He's one of those guys that you can't help but like. And he's been like that since his days playing in junior there with the 67s and a little bit with Sarnia, where he was just a dominant player in junior and just a constant battler. And to see him step up and be nearly a point per game player this year, it's tremendous.
Okay, and then before we get to the questions from the listeners, when we were talking about Hughes and Kako, I wanted to ask you about Kaapo Kakko over on the Rangers. There was another player on the Rangers that we were talking a lot about going into the season, Vitali Kravtsov, who ended up not making making the team. And then he ended up going to the AHL. He played for Hartford, and he only had 15 points in 39 games. So a disappointing season overall for Kravtsov. And you were mentioning, when you're talking about Kako, like hopefully he'll have like a good, you were talking about a centerman to play with, but also Kravtsov potentially on the wing, like either on the same line as him or someone for him to compete with. Like, what are your thoughts on Kravtsov now going into the next season?
Yeah, very, very difficult season for him. Getting sent down to Hartford there in the American League, and then not getting gift-wrapped top 6 minutes in offensive situations. And I think that that was kind of the expectation, is that he was going to go down there and he was going to get all the fun minutes, put up some points, and maybe get the call. And the coaching staff down there were demanding a little more from him, a little more defensive responsibility. He was a young kid, and you know, they're not just going to hand him this job. He was 19. And so he went back to Russia. And this is a player who, you know, had some nice success in the KHL and did not find that same success with Tractor, which is a pretty bad team in the K as well. But, you know, just a couple of goals in 11 games. He got demoted to the VHL, which is their AHL equivalent, a second tier league, you know, did OK there, came back to Hartford and did a little bit better on his return. But, you know, I'm a little concerned with him. At the same time, he's a big power forward. So he's 6'4". He still hasn't filled out yet. These guys tend to take longer. I was probably a little too bullish on him coming into this season, as I kind of expected the Rangers to be this young, exciting offensive team that was expected to lose a lot of games and get a nice high draft pick and give their young players a ton of opportunity. And that's not really the way they went. They turned out to be a pretty decent, exciting team all around. And because of that, they kept their veterans in the lineup. They didn't move expiring contracts. They were looking for points rather than looking for draft lottery balls. And so that kind of stymied a few of their opportunities, including Kako's. And so for Kravtsov, I think that he's a player that I'm not expecting to step into the NHL this fall with the season he just had. You know, he could definitely come into camp and surprise and steal a job. But I think the most likely situation is that we see him in Hartford, and he goes from a player who is clicking at, you know, whatever, 0.35, 0.4 points a game to someone who's more around 0.75, 0.8. And then he's really sniffing for that call up.
Right. So Kravtsov may be someone now you got to think about more long term than we thought at this point last year. Okay. So I guess now we could get to the questions. We got a bunch from Victor Nuno, who's has his own prospects podcast. He's been doing shows with Jesse Sevier on the Fantasy Hockey Life podcast. And Victor just dropped a bunch on us. So how about we'll do a couple from Victor, then we'll come back to his questions if we have time at the end. But one of his questions is a very common one that we also got a similar question from Jeff Lubonat on Twitter. Basically, they want a list from you. They want some names. Just drop, Cam, give us some names. So, like, you know, some guys with fewer than 25 NHL games that will make a big impact next year, or like which draftee prior to 2020 will make the biggest impact this year. Or Jeff asked which rookies or prospects will step into the NHL next year and be impact players. So basically, they want the Oracle, Cam Robinson, to drop some names of players that maybe aren't on people's radars as much that you think are going to really come into the forefront and make an impact in fantasy next year.
Yeah, so I did a little exercise on this, trying to think of a few players that'll actually make an impact, and it's difficult to say, especially with the young players not stepping in as 2020 eligible. So I've got a few. I think Mo Sider is a player that everybody should have on their radar coming up to Detroit. He is a hell of a player. He was, if not the youngest, one of the youngest players in the American League last season as a defenseman, and really stood his own and looked good. I think that if Detroit was in a different situation than they were definitely searching for lottery balls, that he would have got the call up and would have saw some more NHL, or saw some NHL ice. I think that Alex Turcotte, he just signed out of Wisconsin to the Kings, that he is a very talented player. He didn't put up a ton of points in college as a first year. So some people thought maybe he'd return for a second season there, a sophomore year, but no, he's coming out. LA, going to be a bad team, going to be really pushing that youth movement up.
Yeah, obviously we've seen like some players like Alex Iafallo, like, you know, when you play with Kopitar, though, like it is possible to be successful. So who knows? I guess it would really depend on deployment there. Kind of seems with LA, you have to be on the top line or you're probably not going to do anything. As far as Sider goes, like, what do you think? Do you think he has a chance to bump Filip Hronek and take over on the top power play as soon as next season?
It's a tough one, and it's I really like Filip Hronek too. He's a guy that I had on in my deep dynasty this past season, and I want to find a way to keep him because I think his upside is quite high if he can maintain that deployment. And I think Sider is a clear threat to that. And it might not happen this coming season, but I think long term it does happen. Now, you never know how teams will deploy. You know, that maybe they find that giving Sider more minutes to kill penalties, more minutes at even strength, you know, starting a lot in his defensive end because he's such an all-around talent, is going to be more beneficial. then cutting Hronek's offensive minutes and trying to fill him up with some of those, similar to what Dennis Cholowski was getting early in the season, where that guy can't play in his own end. So it made sense to get him his minutes in offensive situations, and that was hurting Hronek.
That was the most frustrating thing. I had Hronek too. Yeah, you draft Hronek, you think that, okay, I got the top power play guy for sure. Then it was like for really weird reasons. Also, they were saying, oh, because Cholowski like shoots left or something. So because of that, Hronek has to suffer. It's like, no, clearly. Yeah. But by the end of the season, they turned it around. Though, like you say, who knows what their motivations were last year since they were going for maybe the Alexis Lafreniere or Byfield picks.
Exactly. So I think as they come out of this, which I don't expect they're going to try to be bottom feeders for long. Another season will be definitely happening. But Stevie Y doesn't like to be in the basement for too long. So, you know, long term, I think it will be on the pecking order of best defenseman on the team. It'll be Sider at the top, and then it'll be Hronek number two. So I think you definitely want to keep an eye on him. And like I was saying, Turcotte, maybe they do a fun line, you know, maybe they put a kid line together, or maybe they, once again, they are looking for lottery balls, and they put, you know, Turcotte and Tyler Madden and maybe Gabe Vilardi's back in the American League next season too, and they really build their kids up coming up strong that way. And so maybe won't. But a couple of dark horses, Samuel Poulin, who probably people don't have on their radar too much, a Pittsburgh draft pick. He is by far and away their top prospect. Really big shoot first player who's got a ton of skill, who is cheap, which is good in Pittsburgh. As we see, they somehow find these players that no one's ever heard of out of a random name generator and put them on their top six wings, and all of a sudden they're getting a point a game for a couple weeks. And I think that Poulin could be a type of kid that really makes a case for himself at a camp. And if he steps in, they're going to put him into a situation that's going to be beneficial. And so he's one to keep your eye on.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess we saw last year, like, no one thought Brian Rust was anything more than maybe a half point per game guy at best. And then he got the right opportunity and he exploded. So why not Dylan Poulin if you're saying he's a really highly touted prospect? So that's a guy. That's the thing with Pittsburgh, right? Anytime anyone goes to Pittsburgh, we saw Jason Zucker, everyone was falling over themselves to add him if they had the opportunity to when he went to Pittsburgh just because he was playing with Crosby. So if there's potentially going to be the same opportunity for Poulin, then why not?
Yeah, exactly. And he's a really good player, too. And Pittsburgh does not have many of those coming up, too. So, you know, is he going to be an upgrade? Like, Patty Marleau's obviously an expiring deal. Does Jared McCann stay in the middle? Does he move up and take a wing spot? And that would kind of steal that away. Does Connor Sheary really belong in the top six next to Crosby? I don't know, you know. So I think that there's opportunities for a kid like Poulin as a 19-year-old to come in and step right into the NHL and potentially make an impact right away.
Interesting. Okay.
The next two I've got here, it's kind of fun. It's the Robertson brothers. So I think that there's a good chance we see both of them in the NHL next season. So Nicholas is the youngest of the two. And recently, Kyle Dubas, Maple Leafs GM there, said that they're going to give him every opportunity to step right into the NHL and in a good position too. And I think that that's not just lip service. I think that they're another team that is hard up against that cap. They need to find impactful players on cheap contracts. And the best way to do that is to get those entry level deals. And so Robertson, I was doing a little digging on him last week in that he scored 1.2 goals per game in the OHL this past season. He had whatever 53 in 40 odd games. And that's the highest mark by an under 19 OHLer in the last 28 years. Wow. And it trails only Eric Lindros in the history of the OHL. So this kid was scoring goals at a rate that we hardly ever see in the Ontario Hockey League. And he's just that type of player that there was no reason he was supposed to be there in the second round last year. He's a really unique and kind of interesting guy too, is that he was just, I think, 5 or 6 days away from being eligible for this year's draft. And the only reason he was is that he was born 12 weeks early. And so for a really premature kid to not only catch up to his peers, but just blow past them athletically is pretty astounding. And then, you know, so he went back as a really, really young player as a draft plus one this year and just dominated, and kind of how I expected it to go down. I had him in the low 20s on my board last season, but I didn't see him putting up these kind of points. And so, you know, they don't want to send him back to the Ontario Hockey League. He has nothing left to prove there. So it makes a lot of sense for him to stick around in Toronto. And, you know, they got a lot of goal scorers on that team, but that could be, he could be one of those ones that they could maybe sacrifice one of their more expensive third liners, Janssen, Kapanen, Kerfoot sort of thing. All those guys are making $4+ million, that he could slide in there making whatever, $875, and potentially put up the same type of metrics.
Yeah, wow. And you know, you think of the Leafs as like, oh, they're too stacked. Where would this guy fit in? But if you think of it, you've got like kind of, I see it as Matthews, Nylander, Hyman. Let's say that's one line locked in. Tavares, Marner. Sort of like there's five guys that I expect to be in the top six. I think Zach Hyman seems to have really earned that spot there. But yeah, there is still that kind of sixth spot, let's say, beside Tavares and Marner. And yeah, maybe it's Johnsson, maybe it's Kapanen. But yeah, maybe this Nicholas Robertson could be another option that isn't on people's radars until now, thanks to Cam Robinson.
No problem. And then his brother, who is a really fun player to watch too, he's much bigger and but also a shoot first type of guy, who does have some pretty underrated hands too. It was funny, he was a real goal scorer in junior for his draft eligible season, and then he came back the next year and really elevated his passing game. And I watched him up close and personal at the World Juniors, and I was really impressed with how he was moving the puck around. So this kid's, you know, 6'3", plays over 200 pounds. He did get 3 games of NHL action last year, but as a rookie in the American League, you know, scored 25 goals in 60 games, was clicking at, you know, I think he put up nearly 50 points. So Dallas cannot score goals. I think Denis Gurianov led their team with 20 this past season, which is just sad to say out loud. So I think they could definitely look to infuse some more offense into their lineup, into their top six. And I think Jason Robertson could be one of those guys.
Oh yeah, Dallas just has so many guys, at least to me, like sort of no-name-ish guys that somehow get into these good situations. And like Gurianov is a great example. We actually had a question from patron Fred, who asked if what Gurianov did this past season is sustainable. He had 20 goals, only 9 assists though, so 37 points in 64 games, but and wasn't playing big minutes, but he was like getting time, like maybe just like we'd expect from Jason Robertson next season. You know, like Gurianov was playing with Sagan and Radulov for a bit, with like Pavelski and Hintz for a bit. He also spent a lot of time with Jason Dickinson and then one of like Perry, Ben, or Hintz. So are you thinking that Robertson could sort of potentially do what Gurianov did this year? And also, what do you think about Gurianov?
Yeah, I think that stepping in Robertson and scoring 20 goals is definitely doable if he's getting the type of minutes and type of mates to play with that Gurianov was seeing, which is going to be a little bit difficult because Gurianov is kind of stealing those minutes unless Robertson kind of bumps out Pavelski or Corey Perry, which I think he probably should push out Perry if they really want to infuse some more speed and skill. But as far as Gurianov, you know, this is a player that's clicked at a high percentage rate historically in his career. So in the American League, his first 3 seasons there, he was, you know, 12.5, 17.5, and then 13% shooter. And then this past season in the NHL, he put up, you know, 15% on just over 2 shots per game. So I think that is probably a bit on the high side for his conversion rate, that he's the type of player that's probably going to live around the 12 to 13% range. And then, but what you want to see is you want to see those shots per game numbers go up. And I think that's what we will see, is now he's become more comfortable in the league, that, you know, he put up 2.1 last year, maybe he's putting up 2.8 next season, and maybe he's only hitting on 13%, but he's still getting over 20 goals. So the math kind of adds up. I think that he's a good player. He's a horse. He's one of those guys that when he was selected, whatever he went, 13th or 14th overall to the Stars, that a lot of people were kind of like, oh, that's a bit of a reach. And it was at the time. But what Dallas was doing is, you know, they were buying on a kid long term. They were looking at, you know, in 4 or 5 years, we could have ourselves a pretty impactful player who, you know, another big 6'3", 200+ pound guy. That he could be someone that could really make an impact for us, not just next season or the year after, but 5 and 10 years down the road. And I think that's what's kind of happening here. So at the end of the day, Gurianov was only seeing 13 minutes a night and he was on the second power play, that there's definitely room to grow for him.
Also, I am seeing that his ice time was slowly inching up. Like his last few games, I'm seeing like 14 and 16 even for one of the games. So who knows? Yeah, next year, like maybe Gurianov, someone to snatch up at the very end of a draft and hope that he does something, you know, someone you could drop right away if he doesn't produce. Do you still have any more players on your list of players who might have an impact next year? I know you could probably go on forever. You probably have a lot of players on your radar. Is there anyone else you wanted to throw out before we get to more specific questions?
I do have a few, but I'll mention one in particular that probably not a lot of people are thinking about is Alex Barboulet is a Tampa Bay prospect. And so these guys just make a habit of finding these players, right? We know Tyler Johnson, used to talk in Swedish names, but they go out and they sign, they find these players that go undrafted. And, you know, so this kid was tearing up the QMJHL there a couple seasons ago. And of course the Lightning were the ones that grabbed him and got a contract signed. And so, you know, in 2018-19, he went to the American League and scored, you know, nearly 35 goals and just about a point a game as a first-year player in the American League. And then last year, he did pretty much the same, you know, scoring 27 goals and 56 points in 60 games. He's definitely ready to push up into to see some NHL ice. And the Lightning are going to have a difficult couple of decisions to make, right? Anthony Cirelli needs a new contract, and there's little to believe that he's not going to get paid because that kid is legitimately good and like an honest-to-goodness Selke level player already, not to mention the offense. So they're gonna have to pay him a lot of money. And so again, another team that's going to be looking, searching around for that cheap entry level contract that can hopefully produce some offense. And the Lightning are the best in the business of doing that. So I think that we see them looking to cut bait on a player. Maybe it's Tyler Johnson. You know, maybe it's someone who's making that $4 or $5 million that they don't necessarily need him and it can be replaced. And so Barre Boulet, I think, is another player that lots of great numbers in the American League, lots of great numbers in junior. You look at that pedigree that he has, and I think that he could be a kind of a sneaky ad late in a draft.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm sure no one's surprised. I hadn't heard of Alex Barre-Boulet before you just mentioned him now, but I definitely can see it happening. It's kind of like in Pittsburgh, right? Like sometimes just random players on Tampa get into good situations and they go off. Like just this season, Alex Killorn was almost at a point per game for a stretch, mainly, I think, because he was on a line with, I think he was on a Stamkos line. Stamkos and Kucherov were swapped, and then also Killorn was on the top power play. So, I mean, Stamkos and Kucherov were split, and Killorn got, yeah, with Stamkos. And so, as theoretically, why couldn't, like, Barre Boulet get into a similar spot? Maybe not top power play, but yeah, if Killorn could do it, and he's someone who, you know, we never thought of as someone who's going to be impactful fantasy-wise, similar to Brian Rust. So, yeah, an interesting situation. People are always interested in hearing these players from either Tampa or Pittsburgh, I feel like. So that's a good name to have on our radar. Okay, so let's go to some more questions. I guess one more from Victor here, and then Victor could go down to the bottom of the queue. But he asked about a goalie, Jeremy Swayman, and he asked, how high is Jeremy Swayman going to climb in your goalie rankings this year? And I looked him up. He's a Bruins goalie, or he's owned by the Boston Bruins, and last year he played in the University of Maine and had a .939 save percentage in 34 games, so obviously a very good season for Jeremy Swayman. And you look at Boston, they have Rask and Halak, you know, 33 and 34 years of age, respectively, so I guess, you know, Rask and Halak aren't going to be there forever. Is this guy Jeremy Swayman the future in Boston? Is he someone that you have rising in your rankings after this good season in Maine?
He's had a tremendous season in Maine. And so I know this because I cover the Canucks for Dobber Prospects, and they have a goalie prospect who was playing there, Matthew Thiessen, who played all of 7 minutes of action behind Swayman this past season. So he did not see much time. And I don't blame them either, because Swayman was that good. So he is a big netminder, you know, 6'3". That's basically, you need that check mark if you're going to have a good shot at being a starter in this league. He signed his contract, so he's leaving after his third season there at Maine, after putting up great numbers his whole career at college. And so, you know, the most interesting part of that is that we had that report from Tuukka Rask saying that this next season could be his last.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And, yeah. Which is very, very interesting, because, you know, I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but you know, they've got Dan Vladar down in Providence, who had a really, really strong season there too. I think he put up like damn near 940 save percentage. And so he's kind of an interesting guy. They got Kyle Kieser, who's another kind of young, big goaltender who's got some chops. But it's going to be Vladar and Swayman challenging for that next gig behind who's going to be the next starter in Boston. And so I think that Vladar's got the head start after being the starter in Providence this past season, but Swayman's going to come in and he's going to push for starts. He's still a young goaltender prospect, which often takes time outside of these Carter Harts, these very elite netminders that kind of can work their way in after, you know, two draft plus seasons. And so I'm expecting that, you know, Swayman's going to come in. He'll be a backup guy next season in the American League. The year after that, he'll be a starter in the American League. The year after that, he'll probably be a starter in the American League. And then he's going to push for NHL ice. So, you know, as good a season as he had this year and as interesting a prospect as he is, I still think that he's a long wait. And for me, I don't usually wait on goaltenders in fantasy unless they are, you know, high end guys. Spencer Knight, you know, we got a kid coming up, Askarov, in this draft that's going to be one of those ones that you draft and you sit on for 2 or 3 years and you're okay with it.
I see. So yeah, Swayman, who knows, maybe there is a path for him to become the number one goalie in Boston, but you're saying that's probably like a 4 or 5 years away type of thing, and who knows what could happen between now and then. So someone to keep your eye on at least. But yeah, after this Tuukka Rask announcement, if that comes to fruition, then yeah, obviously there's going to be a big scrambling probably in dynasty leagues to figure out who's that next Boston goalie to own. You said either Swayman, or who was the guy that you said currently has the edge?
Yeah, Dan Vladar. And so he's only 22, 23, and he's big. He's 6'5", 6'6". He's an athletic netminder he was kind of a mid-round pick by the Bruins back in, I think it was 2015. I'm just trying to pull up his Elite Prospects page right now. Taking the longer, yeah, so 2015, third rounder. He was basically what Swayman's hoping to do this coming season, where he played 30 odd games there for the Bruins, for the Providence Bruins in 18-19, and didn't do so hot. And then this past year kind of took the reins a little bit more and looked really good there. Just 25 games for him, but still the .936 save percentage. So a big goaltender who's putting up some good points in the American League. I definitely think that he's got the edge.
All right, Dan Vladar, another name that I'll have to add to my growing list of names every time I talk to you. I sort of afterwards have a big checklist of players to check back in on in a year or so. But since we're speaking of goalies, I do recall a conversation we had, this is already maybe like 2-3 years ago, where I was asking you just like, if you're starting a brand new league right now, who's like the number one goalie to go for? I recall you said Matt Murray, which seemed like the answer at the time, you know, after leading the Penguins to a couple of cups. Obviously, he's not the answer anymore. I'm curious, if I were to ask you that now, who is in prospect circles or like dynasty leagues, like who's the goalie you go for if you have, I guess it doesn't make sense to say the first pick of a goalie, but like let's say you, if you wanted to grab the best goalie, is the answer like just someone like Vasilevsky or Hellebuck, you know, the two guys who were the best this season and still relatively young? Or, you know, are people starting to think that, you know, Igor Shestyorkin or Ilya Samsonov or Elvis Merzlikins are one of these? Like, what's your take? If you could have any goalie right now on your dynasty team, who would you want?
I'd probably take Vasilevsky just because he's gonna bring me a whole bunch of points right off the hop, and he's young and Tampa Bay's good. But if I'm talking prospects, it's Shestyorkin for sure with a kind of a bullet for me, and that's the guy I got too. So it's been 2 years now that I was sitting on him, and that's one of the rare occasions where it's not a truly straight and cut clear going to be an all-star netminder, but what he was doing in the KHL there for several seasons, he just doesn't lose games. He consistently puts up .940 save percentages, stopping 35-40 pucks a night. And he was doing that in the KHL. And so a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, he's playing on a stacked team. Well, every year he would be a platoon with whatever veteran goalie they'd go out and pay big money to sign. And every year he would outproduce them. And so we saw it. He came over and with the Rangers, and, you know, I think some people probably chalked it up to a little bit of he was riding the hot hand. And, you know, it's unlikely that he's going to play 65 games and put up a .940 save percentage or something like that. But he is that type of talent. And so for me, it's just Shestyorkin, and it kind of helps out a lot that the Rangers are, you know, have probably the deepest prospect pool in the league. You could look at the Kings, you could look at the Hurricanes too, but at their very top end of their prospects, tons and tons of talent, and that includes Shestyorkin. So I think they have a very bright future there. He is quite clearly the man there now. So you're going to be getting starts right off the hop from him. So yeah, it's Shestyorkin for me. I do like Ilya Samsonov a lot. I really like Spencer Knight a lot. I think Merzlikins is good, but I don't love Columbus. Like I said, I like Samsonov, but I don't love Washington long-term. Those are some of the negatives for those guys.
Yeah. And actually Spencer Knight is interesting, because I think we talked about him last year and I was like, oh, okay, I guess you're gonna have to wait forever for him, because Florida just signed Bobrovsky. But the way this last season went, who knows, maybe it's not too long before Spencer Knight comes in and could potentially challenge. And yeah, as far as Shestyorkin, and you're saying that the Rangers have the deepest prospect pool, like they also have all of these all-star existing NHLers like Panarin and Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. So this could be a very scary team very, very soon. So yeah, Shestyorkin. Maybe for this year you still want Vasilevsky, but maybe if I ask you this in a year from now, you're going to say Shestyorkin over Vasilevsky even.
Yeah, potentially. If I got an offer today for my Shestyorkin for Vasilevsky, I would probably have to mash the accept button just because I'm always trying to win a championship, but it would hurt me a little bit.
Yeah, maybe you could still ask for more just because Shestyorkin has all of that hype right now. And Vasilevsky, you know, old news. And he had a pretty weak start to the season, right? That's the thing with goalies. It's so hard to predict. And even guys you think are going to be slam dunks like Vasilevsky end up having rough stretches. Though he also had a rough stretch at the end of the season. Actually, like, Vasilevsky wasn't that great this year overall. But yeah, I guess you do get those guaranteed wins. I guess it depends a lot on your league settings.
Definitely. And I was going to say, if we're talking purely on skill alone, then give me Shestyorkin. I think he's the better netminder. I think that Vasilevsky gets a lot of love because of, you know, he was a first rounder and he looked really good early. But on a pure skill basis, if it's, you know, I got to stop one puck or I'm going into game seven of the cup final, I want Shesterkin.
And then I guess how about as a flip question to before, where we asked like to name some players you think are going to make an impact next year. We also had a couple questions from Victor and also from Kevin Shea. Like, who's a player that you think is like overhyped that people should be trying to sell on in their dynasty leagues right now?
Yeah, I missed that one to prepare.
I could come back to it later if you want to think about it.
No, it's okay. Well, I think there's a couple obvious ones. I think, you know, Tolvanen is pretty clearly one of those guys that he's lost a lot of his luster, though, the last couple seasons, so I'm not sure he hits that marker. I think Kravtsov is one of those guys that we need to be wary about. You know, a kid, Grigory Denisenko, is an interesting one, too, because, you know, coming into this past season, I had him kind of earmarked to be one of the best players outside of the NHL, and he really didn't deliver on that. He wasn't great for Lokomotiv in the KHL. He was okay, but he was seeing good ice. He was good at the World Juniors, as he was expected to be. You know, he was, I think he was the MVP of it the year before, but I didn't think his level of play really elevated that much. He got the points, but he didn't really stand out and grab a hold of the tournament as I kind of hoped he would. So, you know, he's an interesting guy. He's got a little jam to his game, but I kind of hoped that he would be a player that would sneak under the radar a bit and then slide into the Panthers lineup and be like a serious offensive player. And I'm starting to question that a little bit. Those are a couple of guys off the top of my head anyways.
You're just such a positive guy. Like, it's a hard question for you to have to talk negative about someone. You always see the positives. I guess if I would have asked you this a couple years ago, you would have said Nolan Patrick, and then you would have looked really smart.
Yeah, you should have asked me that 2 years ago.
Okay, let's go to a question from Michael Jonathan. Assuming he signs with Minnesota, where would you rank Kirill Kaprizov among the other KHL imports? And he brought up, like, you know, Panarin, Dadonov, Radulov, Gusev, who we talked about earlier. So I looked into it. Like, Kaprizov has had a great season in the KHL this year, 62 points in 57 games with SKA St. Petersburg. So he was right among the league leaders in points. He's, like, three behind Vadim Shipachev, who we all remember from all that drama in Vegas. And by the way, Shipachev played four more games, and Kaprizov was only 3 points back, so who knows if they played the same number of games. Maybe it would have been KHL leading scorer Kirill Kaprizov that we'd be talking about now. So yeah, assuming he goes to Minnesota, do you think he's the type of guy that can put up, like, Dadonov or Panarin-like numbers in his first season in the NHL?
No, not really. I was just coming off being so positive there, too.
No, it's good. Now you could put him as your answer, maybe, of a sell-high person right now.
Sure. Yeah. If you can sell Kaprizov as a player, or for a player who's near a point per game or something like that, who isn't, you know, or if you're going for a championship, if you can go grab yourself a 30-year-old who's quite clearly going to get a ton more points than him, I would do that. I think that he has more upside than we're going to see this next season if he does come over. Because again, we're talking about a huge culture shift. We're talking about a transition into a league that plays much different systems. They're tighter checking. The ice sheets are going to be a different size some nights. It's going to be an adjustment for him. And I also don't love Minnesota. So, you know, best case scenario, he's playing on the top line with Staal and Fiala. And in that situation, if he's seeing 19 minutes a night, he's seeing 3.5-4 minutes on the top power play, then yeah, you know, I think that in that situation, his skill set is designed to put up 60 points. Realistically, I don't know if that's going to happen. The coaches will have to forgive a lot of defensive miscues and that adjustment period. And that's going to be difficult for a team like the Wild, which has been just habitually stuck in this middle ground of being up against the cap and not being that great of a team, that constantly kind of bubble wildcard team who doesn't get to draft high and hardly ever gets playoff gates. So I think they're going to be stuck in that again next year, where they're going to try to be pretty good. And are they really willing to eat kind of the miscues that he's going to have and the hiccups that he's going to have early on in his career? So for next season along, I think we'll probably see his game get better as the year goes on, similar to Gusev. So you might find yourself holding an asset on a player who's playing third line minutes and, you know, isn't putting up any points. And you're like, oh, I should have sold high on him early. At that point, you're probably just stuck and you're going to hold on to him and hope that in 21-22 or 22-23 that he really starts to find his game and blossoms into that high end offensive performer. But, you know, outside of Fiala, I don't like much in Minnesota. So it's going to be difficult for him to really be surrounded with a ton of high end players. And this is a guy who's 23 already, so he should be physically ready to come into the league. But I think that those hurdles are going to be in front of him for the first 4 or 5 months anyways.
Yeah, okay. So Kaprizov, I guess you're right. We talked about Kevin Fiala just recently on an episode. We were looking at players who had a big difference between their first half and their second half. And Kevin Fiala, like, totally shot up and became a superstar. And actually, we mentioned that, can he keep this up next year? And Ben and I were speculating on who his line mates would be. And we thought, oh, maybe if Kaprizov comes, that'll help Fiala. But obviously, we're also hoping for Fiala to help Kaprizov. And it seems to be that it'll need to be, like, a perfect situation for them both to be able to be, like, you know, point per game guys next year. Or what, actually, what do you think of Kevin Fiala in general? Do you think what we saw at the end of the season, 34 points in his last 34 games, was that for real?
I like Kevin Fiala a lot. Yeah, I do think that was for real. I mean, maybe he doesn't click quite that high for the entirety of the season, but he's another guy who's 23 years old, and he's been in the league for a while now. Kind of, he's got probably close to 300 games under his belt, and now he's just finding his stride. So we talk about these players, referencing for Kaprizov there, the difficulty of coming into the league and then being a player. So, you know, he basically doubled his shooting percentage from last year, Fiala, we're talking here, and so that's obviously going to be a huge boost to him. But no, I'm one of the guys that drafted him in the redraft part of my league, and then sat on him for the first, I don't know, 15, 16, 20 games, and then was like, I better cut bait. It's not going to be this season, only to watch him explode down the rest of the season. So no, I think that this kid's definitely got 70, 75, 80 point upside in the right situation, if he can be surrounded with those types of players. Otherwise, we're probably looking at a guy who's going to be, you know, 65, maybe 70 points and kind of leading a dead horse squad.
Yeah, well, definitely Fiala is someone I'm going to be interested to see what happens next year, because he's coming off just such an amazing stretch. Him and Oliver Bjorkstrand both just, like, came out of nowhere and had these crazy runs. And now we have to see if it's for real, because they're both on teams where you don't expect a lot of offense to come.
Definitely, yeah. And Columbus has a couple of fun kids in Texier and Bemstrom as well that are going to come up and be nosing their way and trying to steal some of Bjorkstrand's ice time too. So it will be interesting to watch Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Since we're on Minnesota, I was trying to think, when we were talking about goalies, like, who's going to be a goalie next year that's, like, never even played in the NHL before, or, like, has barely played, that maybe will, you know, really break out? Like, this year, you know, we saw obviously Shestjorkin at the end, or Merzlikins for that crazy stretch. Ilya Samsonov was another one, you know, wasn't drafted in a lot of one-year leagues, but ended up being really valuable. Maybe I could see it being Kaapo Kakkonen over in Minnesota. And obviously, you know more about him. I don't know anything about him. All I know is that Devan Dubnyk, like, completely flamed out, and Alex Stalock was good, but he's Alex Stalock. Like, I can't imagine him being a number one goalie for a whole season. So if you had to pick, like, one goalie who's never made an impact yet that could next year become a goalie worth owning in a fantasy league, do you think Kakkonen is one of those guys?
He is that guy for me, and I hope my buddies in my fantasy league aren't listening to this podcast, because I've got him earmarked as someone who I'm very much watching for this to happen. Because with these young goaltenders that aren't up yet, is that you're looking for a situation that they can come in and steal. And so, you know, with Jordan Binnington in St. Louis, he wasn't the guy that I thought would be the one to steal it, but it was quite clear that St. Louis was right for the picking in the crease. And so I think the same thing can be said with Minnesota right now. As you said, you know, Devan Dubnyk is not the player he once was. Alex Stalock is who we think he is, and that isn't an NHL starter. And so for Kakkonen, he's another big netminder. He's got the good size. He's going to be turning 24 this summer, so he's definitely ready. He has, whatever, I'm looking at it here, about 100 AHL games to his credit, which is a nice kind of maturation process down there. And that's what we've seen. He's been playing pro in Finland since 2014. He put up strong numbers in the Liga for a couple of years, kind of adjusted to the American League, and put up a 910 last in 2018-19, and then jumped up to nearly a 930 this past season for Iowa. And so Those are what you want to see from a young netminder, just constantly coming in, adjusting to a new league, then putting up the big numbers, crossing, adjusting to a new league, then putting up the big numbers. So he's the type of guy that, you know, I don't expect him to waltz in and steal the job right off the hop and be a 920 goaltender, but he has the potential to be that backup. Or there's an injury and he comes up and he gets a start. Oh, he does well. He gets another start. He does really well. He can get that ball rolling, and that's how you steal a job. And so it's a process, and it takes some time, especially when you have established netminders making a lot more money than he does on their cap, which is hard to justify sitting them or burying them. So it will take some effort, but he's definitely one to watch as a guy who could steal a job. And then all of a sudden you've got found money off the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen with these goalie situations, but it seems like that is, like you said, a situation that's ripe for someone new to come in. Kind of like in Carolina, I feel like it's ripe for like an Alex Nedeljkovic to potentially come in, because I don't have a lot of faith in Petr Mrazek personally. It depends what Carolina decides to do. Okay, so next question. This one I don't understand, so I'm hoping... Mathieu asked this in the Facebook group, and I asked him to explain it, and he said, like, don't worry, you'll understand soon. So I'm assuming, Cameron, you know what we're talking about here. Mathieu asked, sing us the song of, then in quotes, the truth, Miller. Odds on him starting next year. So can you sing us a song about the truth, Miller? Like, I was trying to figure, is it Keandre Miller who had all this like unfortunate stuff come out this week where people were being racist? Like, so, but I apparently he's like a really good prospect, and that JT Miller, Ryan Miller, he said odds on him starting next year. So it makes me think like Ryan Miller. So do you know what this is about?
Yeah, it's about Condre Miller, and yeah, we can get this right out of the way. What just horseshit? What happened to him the other day there? That's unacceptable, and yeah, I'm a little disappointed that that the Rangers didn't come out sooner with a more firm stance on the matter. And I did see, I think this morning, that the FBI is involved in trying to track whoever was doing that, and as they should. But Condre Miller is. He's a hell of a player. He's very interesting. I referred to him as the truth at the end of last season, back in, you know, late 2019 sort of thing, is that he's this 6'4", 210-pound left shot defenseman who can skate and create and has a huge shot. And he stepped into Wisconsin as a rookie and put up damn near a point a game. And then this past season, took a little bit of a step back, but Wisconsin as a whole really underperformed for a team that had Cole Caulfield and Alex Turcotte and Miller on that team. And he did just sign his entry-level contract, so he's coming out of school, he's coming to the organization, but you know, the back end for the Rangers isn't as wide open as it once was. And so I think his upside is very, very big on the left side. You know, they don't have a ton of guys that are really going to block them. You know, they got Mark Stahl, they got Brendan Smith, they got Ryan Lindgren, but I'm just wondering if they want to slide another 20-year-old into their lineup right away. As we saw last year, I expected them to be a team that wanted to lose, and then it would have been easy. But they look so good this past season that they're probably eyeing up a playoff spot next year. And so he'll have a little bit of work to do if he wants to steal an NHL job as a rookie. I don't think some AHL time would be bad for him, but long-term, you know, he's looking at playing with either Adam Fox, Tony D'Angelo, or Jacob Trouba as his right side options there. And, you know, those are all great options for him. And I think that wherever he lands kind of in that pecking order, that he is quite clearly the top left side D that's closest to the NHL right now. They have another kid named Nils Lundqvist who just obliterated the U20 scoring record for defensemen this past season in the SHL. He is very, very good too. Another player that I was much higher on than most in his draft class. So they're going to have an insane top four in a couple of years. And the athleticism that Miller has, the uniqueness to his size and his skill set, I think will set him apart, especially in multi-cat leagues. So he's definitely one you should have on your radar in multi-cat leagues. And then, you know, just in point-only leagues, it might be a little bit difficult for him to weasel out a ton of points just purely on the sense that D'Angelo and Fox are going to be higher play creators for the power play. But right. That big, big shot of his and his kind of all-around game he's a fun player.
Okay, yeah, and by the way, Adam Fox is someone who sort of gets lost in the shuffle, because whenever we talk about rookies from this year, we're talking about Makar and Hughes on D, but Adam Fox had a really good year, and it'll be interesting to see if he could challenge Tony D'Angelo for the top power play, maybe get in on even more points next season. I actually wanted to ask you something about defensemen in general, kind of similar to my goalie question. If you were to draft a new Dynasty League today, I asked, like, which goalie would you want, number one? Like, which defenseman would you want? Because, you know, you would think maybe, like, Roman Josi or John Carlson or maybe Dougie Hamilton were the three most valuable defensemen this past season. Then you have Hughes and Makar, who had such impactful rookie seasons. So I guess it probably depends what categories are being tracked, but for like points only, who would be the one that you would go for as having the highest upside over the next, you know, like in a dynasty league if you were drafting right now?
It's either Makar, Hughes, and Dahlin for me.
Dahlin. Of course, Dahlin.
It's very difficult because I love the situations that Makar and Hughes are in. I think that Buffalo still has the opportunity to kind of enter into that fray. They just can't seem to get out of their own way. But it would be one of those three for me. And, God, you know, I honestly think that Quinn Hughes is the more talented of the two between him and Makar, but I'm going with Dahlin. He's the guy that I pegged to be potentially the first defenseman to hit triple digits. It's just a matter of getting him in the right situation and are surrounded by the right type of player. So I'll stick with Rasmus Dahlin.
Okay, well, yeah, I didn't have him on my radar for some reason. I guess, yeah, a bit of a disappointing season for him, but probably you can't blame him. And still super young and had that great rookie season. Who do you think is going to win the Calder this year, assuming they still do that? Like Hughes or Makar, who do you think deserves it?
I'll just quickly say that Dahlin put up like nearly a 60-point pace. He was pretty good this year, too, and just barely as a 19-year-old. I think that they probably give the Calder to Makar. I think that the fans or the media that vote on it probably enjoy watching Colorado a little bit more than Vancouver.
Right.
And Makar is more of that freewheeling goal scoring type of guy who can just wheel like nobody's business. But yeah, if I'm voting, it's Hughes. And I know that I might get called a little bit of a homer for that. But I honestly, I watch the two a lot and I love them both. And I think it's razor thin. But I think that Hughes was more impactful to the Canucks than Makar was to the Avalanche.
Okay, so next we've got Alex Wyatt asked, he's going to miss out on Lafreniere and Byfield in his draft. Who is he looking at? He's got a third round pick, or a third overall pick and a sixth overall pick in his farm draft this year. I'm guessing you're probably going to say Marco Rossi based on what you were saying before. Is that the answer for him at third overall?
Yeah. Definitely, it's Marco Rossi. He is so, so good. People are going to be... there's a lot of draft boards out there that have him still hovering around kind of 8, 9, 10, and they're going to be kicking themselves in a few years. This guy plays an awful lot like Brad Marchand without all the licking and some of the antics. He's 5'9", but he's 180 pounds, so he's strong. He's a consummate worker from all reports. He's has a terrific attitude and work rate, and then the skills just speak for themselves. And so another one, like I said, could very conceivably be in the NHL next fall and be putting up some points too. So no, he's my guy at number three. And then, you know, you've got a ton of fun options for that next pick for him. So obviously Lucas Raymond and Alex Holtz, the two Swedish kids. Holtz is a gunslinger. He's going to score 35 plus goals in this league. He has the best release in the class. He's very, very talented. And he also has, to go along with that package, nice hands, really strong skater too. Not necessarily elite, but very, very good. And then for Raymond, he is an explosive skater. So high end skill in that regard. Great playmaker. His shot is just a little bit below Holtz, but again, the three skill sets there are both very, very high. And then you got Tim Stützle too, who's the center of the bunch. Very, very fast. Again, elite two-step player, playing in the DEL. It would be really interesting to see where he plays next season, because I think he should move away from that league and get into a league that has a little more back pressure and can challenge him a bit more. You know, people are going to look at Jamie Dreisdale, who's the best defenseman in this group by a mile. Cole Perfetti, who just tore apart the OHL. So there's going to be a ton of options for that sixth or seventh overall pick, whatever they had.
Yeah, so Alex, I guess let us know who you end up deciding, but hopefully, yeah, you get Marco Rossi with that third pick, and Cam turns out to be right about him. He's saying maybe potentially even number two, so someone to definitely have your eye on. Okay, we have a question from Eric Doust from Frozen Tools. So, like, what a star-studded lineup of people in our Facebook group with Cam and Eric. By the way, we just supported the new Frozen Tools Patreon. We definitely recommend people check that out. Eric does a great job there. We use Frozen Tools to prep every single episode. He has a question, I guess, specifically for you as a Canucks fan, Cam. What is so appealing about this Triamkin guy? And I looked him up, Nikita Triamkin. He did play this year. He's a 25-year-old defenseman on Vancouver. He was drafted in the third round in 2014. He only had 9 points in 66 games, playing 16 minutes and 44 seconds per game on average. Is there anything appealing about this guy? Is this something you've said in the past?
Yeah, Doust, he's a great guy, and I also fully support Frozen Tools. What a great resource. Triamkin's tall. That's it. Like he's very, very tall. He's 6'8", 6'9", depending on who you ask. And that gets people thinking like, ooh, maybe this is Zdeno Chara. It took Chara a long time to figure it out. Maybe it'll take Triamkin a long time and he'll figure it out and he'll be this dominant Hall of Fame level player, which he will not be. Spoiler alert. He left Vancouver at a time where they were the worst team in the league and their blue line was the worst part of their team, and he couldn't get out of the third pair and didn't want to go down to the American League. And so he returned to Russia and signed a 3-year contract in the K, and he's left with this kind of shroud of potential around him for Canucks fans. And so for the last three seasons, they've been kind of projecting what could be when he comes back. Could he step in and be this top four player for them? And the answer is no, he can't be. He saw his, you know, over year in the KHL, his minutes decrease, his production decrease. They took a letter off of his jersey. I would call it overall not a great decision for him to leave, and it didn't do much for his development. And then I just recently saw that his agent, because he doesn't have a contract with in the K or with the Canucks at the moment, that his agent says, you know, he's very, very much excited to come over and to play for the Canucks again, but he has no interest in going to the American League. That basically they think that that's silly to even suggest. And so for me, it's like, this is a guy who hasn't proved capable of playing in the NHL, especially now on a Canucks team that's their left side of their defense isn't half bad. To basically outright say that I have no interest in playing the American League. If I'm the GM, I'm saying, you know, sure, we'll sign you, come to camp. And if you don't like what we have to say, then, you know, you'll head back to Russia. And that's kind of what I'm expecting out of them.
Okay, so nothing noteworthy fantasy-wise, but interesting for the Canucks fans. Though, actually, one more Canucks question that I remember Brian wanted me to ask you. What do you think about what's going to happen in the crease for Vancouver over the next, I guess, like 5-10 years, potentially? They've got Thatcher Demko and now DiPietro as their two goalies of the future. Who do you think is the one that people should be focusing on if they're building their team right now?
That answer is coming. That will be kind of shown what the organization is leaning towards, because they have a huge decision to make with Jakob Markstrom. He played at a high end starting goaltender level this past season, you know, arguably Vezina level for a good chunk of it. He's a real deal. And I really like Jakob Markstrom because he's taken such a long road to get there. He was dubbed the best goaltender outside the NHL for how many years when he was playing in the Florida system. And it just seemed like pucks would squeeze through him. Another big guy, but he has found his game and his style, and he's going to earn every penny of this next big contract. And whether that's in Vancouver is yet to be seen. So I think that they're going to do their best to sign him. And that means that Thatcher Demko is on his way out, because they can't protect both goalies in the expansion draft. So if they extend Markstrom and give him, you know, 5 years, $6+ million a year, that means that they either run with him and Demko next season and watch Demko leave for nothing in the expansion draft, or they have to actively look to move Demko and try to recoup some value there, which is really difficult to trade young goaltenders. They don't often provide nearly the value that they will to their new organization if they become a starter. Or they let Markstrom walk, which would be very, very difficult. And then it's Demko's show and they have to go out and sign kind of a backup platoon style veteran for a year before DiPietro comes up and tries to challenge him. I've heard for a couple seasons now that there are some in the organization that value DiPietro more than Demko, that they think he has what it takes. And so in the goalie world, that could mean a whole myriad of things, but often it's psychological as much as it is skill. And so DiPietro is this unflappable character who, you know, there isn't a bad goal that can stay with him. He's a really positive, upbeat guy. And not to say that Thatcher Demko isn't, but I that's like a real earmark of DiPietro's. But at the same time, you know, DiPietro's also 6 foot, which is a big knock on a player, and Demko's 6'3". It's at this point, whatever they do with Markstrom is going to tell you who they value more in the organization or where they have to go. Anyways, if they feel they have to re-sign Markstrom, then that just automatically puts DiPietro as the next goalie of the future.
Right. And I guess the problem is we don't even know. Like, what if they try to sign Markstrom and just can't? Like, Markstrom obviously gets a say in this as well. So hopefully mm-hmm. we'll get some answers. But it kind of sounds like you're saying that it's a coin flip at this point, like DiPietro or Demko, at least now until we get more information.
Yeah, and you can look, Demko's a lot closer to being it, whether he's right. doing that in Vancouver or he's doing it in another organization like Seattle, or if they trade him elsewhere. Carolina is a team that I've been kind of pumping for a while as they should be all over trying to trade for Thatcher Demko. I think it makes a ton of sense for their organization. I was pushing, you know, a year and a half ago that the Canucks should be trying to pry Martin Nakash out of them, but that's obviously not going to happen at this point. But yeah, a team like that, you know, I think Demko would step in and be a really, really versatile asset for them that could blend in as a starting netminder within the next year or two. But wherever he goes, he's a lot closer than DiPietro anyways for the fantasy landscape.
What if Vancouver throws in Triamkin along with Demko? Then they could pull Nichas maybe.
Sold.
Yeah. Okay, patron Dylan asks, I'd love to hear Cam's opinion on what the Red Wings prospects and sophomores will have impacts next season. So obviously Dylan is a Red Wings fan, so he listed like Zadina, Sider, who you've already talked about, Valeno, Rasmussen, Chalowski. So yeah, he says, yes, my Red Wings fandom is showing. I guess specifically Philip Zadina is an interesting guy to talk about. He played a bit this year. He had 15 points in 28 games, though he was like on the uptick and seeing top line deployment with Larkin and Bertuzzi before he got hurt. Though, of course, Mantha was hurt at the time, so who knows if Zadina would have gotten that spot. Like, what's your guess for next season on Detroit? Do you think Zadina could bump one of Mantha or Bertuzzi to play with Dylan Larkin, or do you think he's probably going to be a second liner? What kind of upside are you expecting?
Zadina's good. He's the best of those bunch. Again, it's so hard to really figure out what Detroit is going to do for the next season and a bit. But I think that what we saw there while Mantha was out and Zadina was up on the top line, that was fairly indicative of what type of skill level he has and the type of player he's going to be. At the same time, Mantha is further along in that developmental cycle. And so if the team is deciding, hey, we want to be good, we're going to just load up one line or we're going to try to be good anyways. And we're going to load up one line, that Mantha is probably the guy you want in that situation for next year. I think that they should go out and get themselves a decent second line center. And then I would put Zadina up on the top line and I would move Mantha down to the second line to try to drive play from there. So it's at that point, though, you know, they're kind of hoping Robbie Fabry can be that guy for them. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case with his knee injuries, but they're a bad team. But Zadina is the best talent they have up front. And I think long term, he's going to be their best forward. So I do have a lot of time for him. I think Joe Valeno is going to be pushing to be that guy in a couple years, but he's not there yet to be that second line center too, to kind of help them spread out their offense a bit. He's a very speed driven forward who has a lot of skill. I think he's going to be a fun one for that organization, but he's still just kind of finding his way as a rookie pro this past season. And then on the back end, we talked a little bit about those D-men. Their goaltending is another area of that has some concern there too. Is that what's really coming up to push? You know, so they got Keith Petruzzelli, who played at Quinnipiac, as I stumble over my words here. They don't have a ton of really super interesting guys over in their depth chart for goal as well. So I think they have a lot of holes to plug coming up, but if they can do this right and they can land a couple of high end picks, they could be scary, at least offensively.
I'm seeing a list of goalie prospects from Dobber Hockey from back in November. And there's a goalie named Philip Larson. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a name I could throw out there potentially, I guess, could be a goalie for Detroit.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy, I think he played most of his season in the ECHL this past year, so I don't have a ton of hope that he's going to be a player anytime soon. He was good for Denver a couple of years ago in the NCAA, if I recall correctly, but yeah, he definitely couldn't find a role in the American League last year. Yeah, here we go. He's played most of his season in the ECHL, so he's a guy who's potential. You know, he showed some good stuff there for a couple seasons a couple years ago, but I think that's still a bit of a long shot for him.
Yeah, and speaking of Zadina, so the guy who was picked before him in that year's draft, Brady Tkachuk, we have a question from Corey about Brady Tkachuk, or more specifically, he asked for like what prospect plays most like Brady Tkachuk in this draft or last year's draft. So he kind of wants to know the next Brady Tkachuk, but let's focus on Tkachuk for a second. He had a big year this year, 21 goals, 23 assists for 44 points in 71 games. That's a 51 point pace, but in a Bangers League, he was also giving you 106 pims, 259 shots, 303 hits. He even won some face-offs. So Tkachuk was just helping you all across the board. And Brian predicted in our hot takeoff episode a couple years ago, his hot take was that he thinks Tkachuk has a lot more goals than him. He said he could potentially get up to 40 goals next year if he gets a bit more shooting luck. So obviously finding the next Brady Tkachuk will be very valuable to anyone in a Bangers League. Do you have someone on your radar that could be the next like Bangers superstar?
No, not really. Tkachuk is those boys are kind of rare beasts. And I think that Tkachuk has more, Brady, I should say, has more goals in him as well. And I don't see why he wouldn't. You know, this is a guy who's a pretty decent volume shooter and he's clicking, you know, well below 10%. And so for most guys, when they're seeing a ton of power play time, especially in the position that he often plays, which is, you know, near that net front bumper area where it's kind of like a post player in basketball is going to have a higher shooting percentage just because they're closer to the basket than an outside shooter. And so his shots should probably be going in with a little more frequency. So if he can get up into that 10, 11, 12 range while maintaining, you know, he was on pace for 300 shots this year, you know, that's 30 goals we should be seeing out of him anyway. So I think he's a unique type of player. the next kind of Brady Tkachuk coming out of this draft? I mean,
we had a suggestion. Someone responded to that tweet. Patrick Weldon suggested Dylan Holloway. Is he someone that could compare?
No, not really. Holloway is kind of he's a quality center prospect who he's got a decent shot. He doesn't play that he doesn't volume shoot, and he doesn't play with that kind of edge. So no, I wouldn't call Holloway that guy.
Well, that's okay. It just goes to show how good Brady Tkachuk has been that we can't even think of a peer for him. And actually, Brian wanted me to ask you, is it still wrong that Ottawa took Tkachuk over Zadina? Are you changing your mind on that?
I was okay with that at the time, just because of the uniqueness of his game. I thought that they were leaving some offense on the table in exchange for that, you know, basically that asshole player, that tendency that you don't get out of many guys, that they can really fire up the other team and get them off their game with just the way he plays and just his kind of his general outlook and attitude out there. So I was okay with that. I think that, you know, at the time they left some goals, they left some points on the board by taking him over Quinn Hughes, over Zadina, but they've got themselves a unique player, and I think that is valuable, similar to how I talk about Quentin Byfield, who, you know, there's a guy who could be similar to Tkachuk, I guess, if he found that bit of nasty to his game, which is, I'm kind of banking on him finding that a bit, because he is so much bigger than everybody else that he should be able to manhandle him, and he does, but at the next level, he's going to be running into guys that are also, you know, 6'2", 6'3", and 200 plus pounds. And so it's going to be a little more challenging. So I'm hoping he finds a little bit of a dick to his game. And if that happens, then Byfield could be that guy.
Okay. Yeah. With more offensive upside potentially. So
definitely.
Yeah. Okay. A couple more questions for you, then obviously I'll let you go. It's early morning for you. We recorded starting at noon my time, which means you're on the West Coast there, 9 a.m. So I guess, have you already had your morning coffee, or were you waiting for after the podcast?
My wife literally came in and put a cup of coffee in front of me as you were saying that.
Oh.
What a lady, hey?
Especially after you injured her. That's so nice that she
I know. Yeah, I got lucky.
She's a keeper. Okay. Here's the question. Is this guy a keeper? Clayton Keller, someone who you've been into for so long. I think one of our first ever talks with you on Keeping Carlson was you pumping up Clayton Keller. Nick DeSteff asks, is there still plenty of hope for him? This year, kind of disappointing. 44 points in 70 games. That's a 52-point pace. This followed up a 47-point season. That was also disappointing. So now it's been 2 years since that amazing 65-point breakout in 2017-18, which you totally called. You said Keller was going to be great, and he was. Where are you currently standing on Keller? Is it just a situation thing that it's hard to get a lot of points in Arizona, or are you starting to get worried that maybe he doesn't have that 70, 80 plus upside anymore?
No, I think he has it. I hate Arizona. I hate them. another team that just can't get out of their own way is that, you know, they have, you know, Hall and Keller and Kessel and Schmaltz and OEL, and they should be playing more of a run and gun style, but then they surround them with not so great assets around it. So Vinny Hinostroza and Lawson Krause and Carl Soderberg playing in your top six, and, you know, no disrespect to Christian Dvorak, but he's not a top line center. So I still think that there is time. This is a kid who's 21 years old, and he has 250 plus NHL games under his belt. Like you said, he already has a 65-point season. He saw his minutes get chopped by, you know, over almost 2 minutes between 2018-19 and this past season. A big chunk of that was almost a minute of that was on the power play. So that's not going to help you out. And then the shot volume is kind of maintained. He's basically a two and a half shots a game type of guy. And so that's going to be difficult for him to push into the 25-30 goal range, unless he's hitting above 10%, which I think he's totally capable of, but it's the Arizona factor. And, you know, I can love a player, and I had him fourth on my board back in his draft year in 2016, and he slipped to seven. I thought it was a huge win. I really liked the direction that the Coyotes were going. They're supposed to be analytics driven, and then they've made a bunch of decisions that I definitely question, but that's not one of them. I still think that Clayton Keller should be a very, very good player, capable of being that 65, 70 plus point guy. It's just, you need help. You need the minutes in the right circumstances, and you need surrounding talent. And, you know, I expect Taylor Hall is going to waltz, and Phil Kessel's slowly become a shadow of his old self. And it's not going to be easy for him to get there. So if you can find someone who wants to buy on that upside, and you can kind of get yourself someone who's maybe older and in a better situation, who's going to be a higher bet to get you 60, 65 points next year, but maybe not have a chance at 70, 75, I'd probably make that deal.
yeah, it's just an unfortunate situation for him. I totally agree with you. Hall's going to be gone, and I've lost most of my faith in Phil Kessel being like a big impact guy, especially like, you know, it's one thing to say that I think Kessel can be good, but then to be good enough to help other players also be really good, I don't know if that's going to happen. So yeah, it's going to could be rough for Clayton Keller just because of the guys he's going to have to play with for the next little while. We've got a question here from at Jeffrey P. Perry over on the Islanders. Will Noah Dobson eventually take over the New York Islanders' top power play quarterback duties? And like, what do you think we can project for him? The first thing that comes to my mind is almost like, who cares? Just because we haven't seen a top power play defenseman on the Islanders actually make an impact in so long. Like this season, looks like Devin Taves had the most power play time for the team, and he only had 6 power play points to show for it. Ryan Pulock is next; he had 8 power play points, seeing 42% of the power play time. He had a nice season overall, especially in a Bankers League. You got 35 points in 68 games, and some hits and blocks from Pulock. Letty finally bumped; we don't have to worry about him anymore. Noah Dobson, he played this season. He played in 34 games, had 7 points, but no power play time. So what are you expecting from Dobson moving forward? Is that his job for the taking?
Yep, that is his job for the taking. And this past season was a unique one for him because he had done all he could in junior. He was a tremendous playing in the QMJHL. He, you know, looked great at the World Juniors. He played 30 plus minutes a night on a big playoff run for them, for the Huskies in the Q in his last year. And so they're like, what are we going to do? Are we going to send him back to junior for another season to stagnate and to kind of struggle through? Or do we keep him up when he's probably not quite ready and kind of eke out minutes for him? And so that's what they did, and I respect that. So he saw whatever 12-13 minutes a night. You know, they were sheltering him a little bit. You know, he didn't see too many defensive zone starts. Again, that's good. They're trying to keep it positive for him. But now he's going to be, you know, he'll be 20, turning 21 next season. He'll already have 35 games under his belt. I think that you're going to see him really take a hold of a full-time spot on the team. Now, I don't know if they're going to give him that first power play next season. My guess is probably not. But at some point, I think Matt Barzal is going to explode. Because whenever I watch Matt Barzal, I think, why isn't this guy getting 90 plus points? He is so, so good. And I think the what they're waiting for is for a couple of these young guys to really develop and surround that and that nucleus. And Dobson's definitely going to be one of those guys. So in a couple of years, when we're looking at Barzal on that top unit, we're looking at Dobson kind of QBing it from the back end. Hopefully Wahlstrom becomes that shooter, that finisher on the wing, that I think we're going to see everybody's point totals creeping up. And for me, Barzal is going to be that real straw that stirs the drink. But I think Dobson's quite clearly their top asset on the blue line, an all-around player, 6'4" on the right side. He's very, very good. And I think that he has the type of juice, if he can get in a situation where he can lock down 3+ minutes a night on the power play, and, you know, Barzal's clicking at a 90-point pace and they've got a couple of trigger men with him, that he could be a guy who could put up 60 points.
Wow, yeah. And maybe even sooner rather than later. So definitely another like under the radar guy to look at. Kind of reminds me of Adam Boqvist on Chicago. Like you got to imagine that once he gets the top power play for good, like he got bumped by Duncan Keith this year, but Boqvist did get a shot there, and that's a high upside spot as well.
Definitely. And Boqvist is that pure offensive guy too. So with Dobson, that he's going to be a minute muncher. He'll probably play, you know, 23, 24, 25 minutes a night for the Islanders when he's really hitting his peak. But Boqvist is, he's that water bug who's really going to be high risk, high reward style hockey, and, you know, get in while the getting's good in Chicago while they still have Kane ripping it up. I'd love to see him kind of take over that first power play next season and just let him run with it. Just have some fun with it in Chicago. They're not looking to make the playoffs. Just let's see if this guy's really got the goods.
Well, I don't know. Like, they came kind of close this year. Like, they were challenging for a bit. So who knows? Obviously, they'll need some bounces, and we'll see what happens in net. Like, Robin Leonard's gone now. But I don't know. I feel like Chicago still could be a team that surprises people if things bounce right.
Yeah, I mean, they could battle for a wild card. Like, they were kind of in the hunt for a wild card. They weren't making the playoffs this year. But, you know, yeah, if especially if they can get themselves, like, if all of a sudden Boqvist is a guy who can put up 40 plus points, 50 points next year on the back end, and you know, they've got a couple of interesting young players there as well, too, to go, you know, with Dak to kind of mix around Kane and Taves. And DeBrincat obviously had a big down season. I expect he's going to rebound. So, you know, they definitely have some pieces still. They're not the contenders that they were locked in for what, a decade before this, yeah. But they still have some to come out of that streak and still have players like that, Boqvist and Dak, and still have Kane, who's just almost an ageless wonder how he continues to get better. It seems like it's pretty special that they can still boast a decent lineup.
Yeah, actually noticeably absent from this list of players you listed, Dominik Kubalík had that great run as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's someone that could continue this next year? I think Brian was saying he doesn't think it's likely that it was sustainable what he was doing.
Yeah, he's a guy that I definitely was undervaluing. I mean, he clicked at 20%, and so basically no one clicks at 20% unless you're Leon Draisaitl. I don't think Kubalík is going to be putting up 30 goals next season again, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he gets to chew up more power play time. Maybe his shot generation goes way up, because he's another guy who just barely put two shots on net, and you know, to click at 20% at that rate is pretty unlikely, especially with how much he scored at even strength too. It's pretty nuts. So I definitely see that number going down next year. I'm not sure I'm buying so high on a 24-year-old rookie who kind of was on a PDO bender.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And so, Cam, I guess that's all the questions. Oh, here, actually, one more quick question from Jordan L. on Twitter. Do you have any FA college signings worth an ad as a rookie for next season? Someone who wasn't drafted but just signed out of college. Who's like the last one to make a big impact?
Torrey Krug. They don't happen often, the guys that actually make a big impact. You know, like, we see it all the time, or not even just undrafted guys, but like guys that are coming out after their third or fourth year and people are really jacked up waiting for them. You know, Ryan Donato or Dylan Sakura and guys like this, and it's like, yeah, they're Jimmy Vesey. It's like those guys aren't great. Like, it's just they look good as fourth-year college players because they're 22, 23 years old, and they better, you know, if they want to be pro players, they better be torching the NCAA at that age. So nobody really jumps out at me this season as a unrestricted free agent who's going to sign this summer with a club that'll really step in and do much.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Jimmy Vesey, I remember when all that buzz was around him when he had the option of where to sign. I wonder how many people listening could even say what team he's on right now. If anyone's curious, he's on Buffalo, and he was actually playing on a line with Wayne Simmonds and Curtis Lazar at the end of the season. All players that I don't know if people realize were on Buffalo at this point. So, fun fact. Okay, so thanks all the listeners for your great questions. This has been a lot of fun. Of course, thank you so much, Cam, for joining us and giving us so much of your time and your expertise. I'd imagine there's so much stuff for you to promote. I want to give you the opportunity, obviously, you know, over on Elite Prospects, and then you've got Dauber Prospects, and then I know your Patreon is really great. I'm a member of your, I support your Patreon, and I'm in your Facebook group, and there's some good prospect chat there. So I'll kind of give you the floor to promote whatever you've got going, which is a lot.
Sure, yeah. A little less than usual with no hockey going on, but like you said there, I've got over at EP Ringside, which is the scouting analysis branch of Elite Prospects. So I've been spending my year kind of doing some deep dives on some of the upcoming players. So I've got a few really heavy analytical and film room style pieces there, and that, unfortunately, you do have, it is a paywall sort of thing, but it's definitely worth it just to have the advanced stats alone on the Elite Prospects page. I think is worth the monthly fee, let alone all the scouting and analysis you get. We have a bunch of tremendous workers over there that we're putting together our first draft guide, which will be big, kind of rival the black book that hockeyprospect.com does. So that's going on really well. Dauber Prospects and Dauber Hockey, we just keep churning out articles and information and a ton of good quality profiles and stuff like that. So our crews over there are doing a bunch of good work right now. Myself and some of the associate editors and Peter Harling are putting together kind of a collective consensus look at all the organization's prospects. We're going to rank them. We're going to rank the top 10 in each organization and kind of give them a grade and their upsides. Joakim Nevalainen and I are already deep into our fantasy prospect report work, putting together 100 profiles of the draft eligible kids with comparables and upsides and all that good stuff. So keep an eye out for that whenever that gets released this summer. And Patreon, it's good to get a little support from some of the people that help me do this, because it takes a lot of free time to steal away from the family. So it is nice to get a little extra support there. So that's Crazy Joe Davola Scouting at Patreon.
Okay, yeah, and I'll put all the links to all of this stuff in the show notes. I'll message you offline to get all the links to make sure we've got everything. Obviously, Cam knows his stuff, and I definitely recommend reading everything that he does. And wait 5 years from now, when he's the only one who was right about Byfield ahead of Lafreniere, you're going to wish you got in on it right from the start. Cam, thanks so much again for joining, and I hope you have a great day, and I hope that you and all the listeners are just staying safe and getting through this crazy time in the world. We're all just sitting at home, like, waiting for hockey, waiting for things to get back to normal, and hopefully staying sane in the process.
That's the key. Staying sane. Yeah, staying inside and staying sane. Keeping busy, getting some exercise. As a school teacher, I can't, and a dad, I can't help but get that in there. You know, keep a routine, put on some pants during the day, you know, wash your hands, get out for some exercise if you can. Don't just eat all the quarantine junk food too early. I have to remind myself that too. But yeah, hopefully everyone's out there staying well and staying happy.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks again, Cam. Check out the show notes for all of these links, and we will catch you all with another episode next week. We've got another exciting interview coming. Brian's got, I don't think it's locked in yet, I won't say it yet, but keep an eye on our Twitter account at Keeping Carlson for the big name drop of a fun interview we're gonna have. Not as big as Cam, of course, but you know, we're doing our best. We got a good one coming, so we're gonna keep the shows going all throughout the summer. Keeps us busy, and hopefully it keeps you entertained. So thanks again. Bye, everyone.